I'm here with the legend Audra Kepler. We took a break from the podcast because, you know, life comes first. Thank you for being on, Audra.
Appreciate it. Good to be back on here again.
Give people like an update on your golf journey and like all the stuff you're doing since the last time you were on.
All right. So I played in a few tournaments in the last few months. I went to Florida in October. Played in two back-to-back golf tournaments. That was like one big tournament, and the first week was stroke play, and then they would seed you for match play the week after. So I was like in the middle of the pack out of a 64 player field, so I was 34th seed going into match play. And unfortunately, our first week, our third round got canceled due to the amount of rain that we got, so the course wasn't playable. And the final group, which were the leaders, they just hit their first tee shot, so they decided to cancel the last round and do a 36-hole tournament. So that was unfortunate, but we still got 2 days in, so we're pretty happy about that. And then match play was good. So they did a different kind of match play. So the first 2 days of match play, you're in a foursome, and you play 3 9-hole matches, and you get a point for winning a hole, you get a point for a birdie. And I lost my first match of the day to one of my good friends on the last hole, and then I came back. And so you play 27 holes for those 2 days of match play, and then I won my other two matches. And then the next day, I won all my matches, and so the person whoever has the most points in each of the pods of like your foursome groups moves on to the Sweet 16. So I moved on to the Sweet 16, but unfortunately I lost in the first round. This girl just made all her putts, and I was mostly outside of her, so she got a lot of good reads by me, but props to her for winning the match and almost making it to the final match. So she made it to the final four, or maybe Elite Eight. So that was cool. And then I played in the Arizona Open and didn't do as well as I wanted to. I've been kind of finding an injury the last few months, and it flared up when we were in Florida in October. So I got it checked out in December, got that all squared away, did a PRP injection. So I start physical therapy tomorrow, and looking forward to getting better and stronger mentally and physically and getting this ankle 100% better. So there's my life update.
That was like very detailed. I feel like normally when I ask people that, people are like, ah, it's been cool, played a couple tournaments, you know. I was like very specific.
Thank you, I appreciate it. What's been going on with you?
Not too much, you know. I'm just working, and then a couple of things. I actually traveled in probably the worst time to travel, like 2 days after the new year. So that was like definitely exciting. And I don't know, I'm getting to a point where it's like I have life goals, and then like I'm not a competitive golfer. So it's like I want to experience certain golf courses just to be like, oh, okay, that's what that is. So yeah. I'm kind of, as you know, I like lists. So I'm creating lists for like golf experiences. I played really good at Spanish, still played fairly trash at Spy when I played there, but I got my first birdie at Spy, which was like a really big deal for me. And yeah,
you came back the back nine too.
Yeah, 39 on the back nine, I was pretty hyped on, like, albeit I'm playing from the white tees, but I was pretty stoked on getting a 39 from the back, like the back nine.
Yeah, you did great compared to the last time we played on my birthday.
It's just, like, Spy's a really hard course. Like, it's, like, you're a pro golfer, so it's not as, like, you have some experience and you're a pro golfer. I feel like it's just the equivalent of, like, everything I don't do well, I'm forced to execute. And the minute I go into a dark place in my head, I'm cooked.
Yeah, but just something to learn from for yourself and get better as a golfer. And know when you start creeping into that dark place, just find a way to see some light in that situation.
I feel like playing Spyglass is my only way of experiencing US Open golf, because I feel like the where I go is where most pro golfers go during the US Open, where it's like, oh no, it's happening again. Because on hole two at Spy, I hooked it into the tree, hit the ball 50 yards, and then hit a hazard mark because I thinned a 5-iron. So I was sitting for birdie 170 yards out with the ball. Kapalua lie. A lie like we were watching the pro golfers hit, yeah. With Nota Begay in the leveler. So the ball was below my feet. I'm hitting a 5-iron. It was very hard to stay composed, but I was like, let's just fight for double. Like at this point, let's just play for double. And if we can walk out with a double, you know, you can, like, the third hole's an easy par three. The fourth hole, I wanted to play it so well. And then the fifth, I almost got a hole in one, which was super sick. So, but it was like, I'm learning as a golfer, and I think it's from you, to set small milestones when things go bad.
Definitely. I mean, golf's such a great game because you could always get better and learn something new about yourself and try and improve on the things that you were weak at. So you've come a long way in the last year.
I like to think that every year I come a long way. That's like the my what I try life. To do every yeah, like I try to like look back 3 years and feel like I did really bad 3 years ago, because that means I'm moving forward. Audra, tell me why this Hawaii tournament that happened, why the pros just beat it up so much. Like, what is it about this course?
I don't know. I mean, I just saw a few holes today flipping it back and forth between the Niner game. But I don't know if I was watching a Tiger Woods video game or real golf, because the winner was like 33, 34 under. That's just impressive. So the commentators were mentioning that a lot of the players are going down there like a week early and doing more practice rounds than they've done in the past, because there's so many tee shot lines that they could take because the fairways are wide and they could take it more down on the slope, so they'll get like 50 yards of rollout. So I think just the players are getting better and evolving, and I mean, hitting the ball helps too, of like hitting it farther, but I mean, just their preparation for that event. They did a really good job, and the greens were at a 10.5, so that's really on the slow side for the PGA Tour, but it was kind of a resort course, so they can't really make a drastic change with the greens in like a month time, because then they'll kill the grass. But I think it was definitely gettable where they could be aggressive on chipping and putting unless it's downgrain. But I think they executed their game plan really well. And I think it just showed by, I don't even know who won, but just shows how well they did and how well they went.
It's kind of like, I don't know who won either. And that's like super sick. We're doing a podcast and we're basically like, yeah, we didn't really watch the tournament, but it's to me, it just kind of showed how A, they're really good, and B, when it's like a approach shot clinic, like, you know, Murakawa is going to be up there, you know, JT is going to be up there, because it's like, who are the best iron strikers? If they hit the ball in play, it's like this course has no defense for them if the wind's not up. And I felt like I was like more interested in like, okay, let's watch the basketball, let's watch the football, because it's just like, there wasn't for me as much drama, because like, they're just too good for this course. They're just absolutely annihilating it.
Yeah, they definitely did, for sure. But side note, Clay Thompson comes back today. Super excited. It's Clay Day. First game in 2 years.
Is that a big moment? Because like, I mean, I'm a Kings fan, and with the Kings, like all I do now is I go on ESPN Trade Finder and I'm trying to figure out how we can get rid of De'Aaron Fox's contract. That's where my fandom is going. But like,
I think you should be in the office for the Kings if you're doing that much homework on the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely like to get paid money just to like come up with hypothetical trades. That'd be great. But
do a little consulting with them.
Yeah, but what is like, I remember when Clay got drafted, he's always been like a lifeblood of the team, kind of a compliment to Steph with like his 3-point shooting. what is kind of Klay for you as someone that's a hardcore Warriors fan? What does he mean both in terms of being a fan and for the team dynamic moving forward when he comes back?
Well, I think for one, the fans are so happy and so excited. They're like itching at the bit to like just have him be on the court. So, but for me, like I met him in Century Theater downtown Pleasant Hill, like after his first or second year. I was getting more popcorn. My parents and I went to the movies, and I see him walking in a hoodie and sweats, and his hood's over his head, so I couldn't really tell who it was, but I was like, I know that strut. I know that guy. And then he slightly turned his head. I was like, oh my gosh, that's Klay Thompson. And there was hardly anyone in the popcorn line. It was just me, him, and his buddy. And then I was like, hey, before anyone notices, can we like snap a quick picture? And they literally just lost in their like playoff game like a week before that. And then, yeah, he was at the movie theater. So, I mean, he's my favorite player on the team. I think the team dynamic, like they're always pumped to see him working out with them. And he's put in a lot of hard work to get to where he is today. And his defense is so good, his energy on the court, and he's a splash bro. Him and Steph are probably going to set a new record by the end of the season for most threes as a team, with Klay Thompson now as another arson to their starting five.
So when I look at now we're going super basketball deep nerd stuff, but I'm fine. I'm going wherever this goes. I'm a professional talker. For me, like when you look at the front, when you look at the starting lineup, you got Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green. That's a solid starting lineup.
And Looney.
Which one?
And Looney.
I mean, Looney's solid, but Looney.
In the center.
He's like Bill Cartwright. Five,
but he's doing a lot better this year.
Okay, but like what I'm saying is, we go to the backcourt. I'm a big fan of Jordan Poole. I think he's a really solid. I think he's like the perfect six-man guy. He's gonna kind of give you the Curry, Klay scoring look from the bench that lets you stay play that way. Payton, obviously, Gary Payton, good defensive player. How do you like move it? Like, obviously, you guys are gonna win a lot of games in the regular season, but how do you see Iguodala, Porter, and Toscano Anderson kind of affecting playoff games against the top teams?
I think it's going to be huge energy off the bench. I mean, they already are like a huge energy off the bench now. And to go back again to like what the commentators say, like every game that the Warriors play, like the other team wants to beat them. So it's almost like a playoff experience already. Like every game, it feels like that. So I think they're just getting prepared that way for when the playoffs come. They're at that level already that they've been at all season long. And they got a great coaching staff, not just Steve Kerr, but all the way down to like their trainers and like their other assistant coaches. If you see their bench, they got like six coaches on the bench. And they have a lot of good history with like all their coaches. So
for the power ranking of basketball coaches, I just went to the Kings versus the Spurs, and like watching Popovich coach a game, even though he doesn't have the talent pool, you can just see he's a legend, just the way he conducts himself on the sideline. I think Steve Kerr is kind of going to the Rick Carlisle, Greg Popovich territory for me, of like guys that I think are like revered head coaches, NBA coaches, where if you see him, maybe George Karl is another one where it's just like, that's a solid coach.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
So who are you looking at as your big adversaries coming out of the West? Are you looking at the Suns, the Jazz? I mean, Ja Morant with the Grizz. Are you like, I mean, that would be crazy if the Kings and the Warriors play in the first round, because I'd actually watch all those games and we'd probably not win a game. Which one?
We'd probably be at the Sacramento Kings game.
I'd probably go to that one, but
all those teams just mentioned are really good teams in the West. I mean, I feel like the West has dominated a lot more than the East. So, I mean, those three teams right there, the Suns, the Grizzlies, the Utah Jazz. They're tough teams for sure. So I feel like it's going to be a tough game either way. But now that we have Clay back, who knows what her potential is. So
yeah, I'm being negative Nancy. Like, I think the Suns are a tough look because they can score with the Warriors. I think the Jazz are tough because they have the size and physicality to maybe slow them down and play a slower style. To me, those are the two teams that could be roadblocks. I think the Grizz and Ja Morant are maybe a little too young to get the job done, but I think they're probably going to be the most exciting, consistent to watch playoff team this year because they're probably going to be playing with their heart out, doing highlight plays. But I'm looking at Suns, Warriors, Jazz as the three kind of class of the division. Maybe the Lakers can kind of sneak in there and get towards the end, but I just really don't like the chemistry of that team currently.
Yeah, me either. Don't get me started.
I want to get you started. What don't you like? Let's get you started.
I don't like LeBron James.
What do you like? Why don't you like the greatest of all time?
He's not the greatest of all time, but he just never gets fouled out. He complains after every foul that's called on him, or if it's not called, if he's driving to the basket. He's like a specimen. Like, don't get me wrong, I respect him as a player, but I just don't like the way he plays. Like, he tries to like get a charge, and he weighs like a feather, when in the end he weighs like 250 all muscle. He shouldn't be like flying 8 feet past for a charge. And then I don't know, I think he's just a big baby, and I mean, there's just too much ego on that team. Anthony Davis, LeBron, I don't even, who else is on there? Westbrook's on that team.
We got Rusty. We lost Rondo.
Yeah, there's just too many of those players that all they care about is themselves. And it's like, basketball is a team sport. Like, move it around. Like, get a flow going. But so that's where I stand with the Lakers.
Well, what I was watching Hoosiers on New Year's Eve with the legend Paul Malinkey. And I was wondering if, like, Jimmy from Hoosiers was the first ever player empowerment. Like, was he the first ever LeBron? Because he kind of just sat out for a long period of time because he couldn't get over a circumstance. And it's like, I was sitting and it's like, was that the birth of the player empowerment movement, was Jimmy and Hoosiers?
Yeah, maybe it was in the late 60s or 70s, whenever that movie came out.
Now that slow clap is like hands down probably one of the coolest sports moments ever.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so we got that. We got Niners coming up. We got basically the next month of basketball is about to be like the funnest period of basketball, leading into the All-Star game. Then you get the dunk contest, all that. And then
March.
Yeah, it's a fun sports time. I like golf right now. The West Coast swing is kind of my favorite time in the golf. I like all golf. I won't lie, like the Hawaii tournaments always are not as fun for me. Like, this tournament wasn't that fun. Next week, I feel like, is like the exact opposite of this tournament, where it's just a penalizing, like, it's going to be a mess. The winds are up, narrow targets.
I mean, it is narrower for sure. It's a totally different golf course. It's shorter, so they're not going to take a lot of drivers off the tee. It's all about placement off the tee and maybe a little more windier conditions because they're kind of closer on the.
I think that my issue right now with golf is until CBS or these big networks really get the coverage, Golf Channel at times can provide a really sterile, boring telecast. And it's like, it's not competing with like what I get in the NBA or the NFL. Like, those broadcasts are dynamics. I'm getting graphics shown at me, all different stuff. And it's like, we got like a middle-aged man with a protractor telling you that sometimes the ball is above your feet or below your feet. It's hard for me to kind of stay engaged currently until we get to Jim Nantz.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Jim Nantz is great. I kind of like Bones McKay and I forget his name, but Hunter Mahan's caddy. Like, they paint a really good picture. They walk those courses, so they know. And so I have more joy of listening to them talk because they know they've been there. They've been on the bag and they know those courses just as well, if not better than the commentators. So
I just like with these Hawaii courses, like I was looking at some of these views at Kapalua, right? And I get they can fly a drone and all that, but I wish that there was some way to almost give us like a yardage book perspective. Like, okay, if you miss here, this is what it is. If you miss here, like it feels like in this modern day and age, there should be like a conversation and a production meeting. How do we make the golf course come alive to the viewer that's like the nerd that wants to sit in the afternoon and really understand the concept of this hole? And I feel like they're like, okay, this is par 3, 180. Bunkers in the front, they're gonna fly it to the back, let's go.
Yeah, well at least they paint the picture of the visual of the hole, because that would be tough, because a lot of those driving holes there, it's kind of like a blind spot. There's not like a mountain peak to aim at, or you can't even see the fairway half the time out there. So at least they show the visual of the hole, and then the layout of like, okay, here's 300 yard mark, 320 bunkers. So, I mean, I guess that's that yardage book visual that you were talking about.
Just, like, for me, it's like, I wish we could have, like, because they did the illustration of Nota out there. I wish we could have seen, like, if I was a producer, release a golf ball. Just drop a golf ball at the top of one of those hills and just illustrate how long the ball goes from a hill. Or another thing is, like you said, I think it was hole 5 or 6. It's like a blind fairway. Just stand there and show what the sight line looks like. Because with the raised view, we kind of see it. But I'm kind of curious, like, what are the sight lines? What are the targets these players are taking off the tee? Because I think for most golfers, they'd be petrified because they're not, there's no clear sight. You just have to believe in lines.
Yeah. That's when practice rounds and all that preparation plays a huge part of trusting your lines and knowing that if I hit it this far right, it's going to be okay.
This tournament felt like driving range golf.
It pretty much was, essentially. Well, but yeah, it pretty much was.
It was like
next week. Well,
I feel like there's going to be a lot of WDs next week. I feel like there's going to be a lot of people that say they're going to play and then they might have one bad round. And there's going to be like 6 or 7 withdrawals by like the first round.
I don't know. I have 2 people that I know that are playing in the Monday qualifier tomorrow. So I'm going to be looking at the scoreboard for that. So go Gregor Main.
Well, I think that it's a great time to Monday qualify because what was it last year? You found a DJ hitting the golf ball and hitting someone and the announcer was making fun of him. But there's Palm Springs, Torrey, and Pebble, I believe, are all going at the same time as the Abu Dhabi tournaments that pay probably more. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance for young American or young golfers to kind of sneak into these events.
Definitely a lot of people that don't have good status can make those moves right there early on the season.
What would be like the hardest? I guess Torrey would be the one that would be like the roughest one to qualify into because it's just like so friggin' long.
Yeah, but all these people hit up far enough. So, I mean, it's just natural for the like person to have a lot of nerves of Monday qualifying in your first PGA event or just getting in the PGA event, hopefully not putting on too much pressure to like perform well because this matters. But I mean, I don't know, just doing what you do is just play golf and play your game. So I feel like all of them could be a test. But yeah, Torrey's tough. It's hard. Even Riviera is tough.
Pebble with the wind up is really hard.
Yeah, it can't be for sure.
Because it's like what I'm learning is golf courses built on oceans are basically built for strong winds. And if there's no strong wind, it's super gettable. But when the wind is up, it's like get ready to get kicked in the balls.
Something like that.
I like that. That's pretty cool. For next week, what selfishly for me to expect? Is it going to be just like kind of like a Kevin Kisner type guy that's probably going to win, someone who can keep the ball in play, really good around the greens? Is that probably going to be the prototype? We're not going to see like a Jason Kokrak hitting it 320 over greens.
I see like Justin Thomas. He's super good. Or maybe just a name that maybe Tony Finau. Maybe John Rahm. Because I think he lost by one today. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised seeing those guys do well and overpower it for sure.
Okay, so you're looking at that. I was kind of thinking that it might be one of these kind of rather seemingly anonymous golfers that might just sneak up out of nowhere, because maybe some of the big names are thinking about these big paychecks kind of coming up on the under. But you're the legend, Audra Kepler. What should people know about the LPGA? What's going on with the LPGA? I know they're away for a little bit.
They announced that they're going to have a $10 million purse for the Women's U.S. Open this year. So let's go. That's pretty exciting. Huge step forward in the LPGA purse prizes. So that's the first time in history that we've ever had that big a purse before. Nelly Korda is still number one in the world, and I feel like she's still gonna be as much as successful as she has been last year going into this year. I think Callaway signed I forget, she won the U.S. Open this year. You were at an Olympic Club.
Sasso.
Yeah, so she signed a pretty big deal with Callaway, so that's exciting for women's golf to sign endorsement deals like that, and club companies endorse into women's golfers, because a lot of girls on the LPGA, they still have to pay for their clubs and they don't have trailers at their golf tournaments. So it's nice to see that the golf companies are going more towards the women golfers besides the men golfers for endorsement deals. So that's a huge step forward. But we got a new commissioner too, so it shows promise that she's wanting more money. We've gotten more money in the last 10 years, but it's nowhere near where it is compared to the guys, but it's going forward. So she's working hard and gonna make the LPGA a lot better. So there's promise.
I mean, the way Sasso played Olympic Club was pretty impressive when I walked with her, because it's like she was hitting driver probably about 300, but you know how tight Olympic is. So it's like, yeah, if you're gonna hit the ball 300 yards, you're probably going to have to believe that it's going to move a little bit left or right. And she was threading those needles, and it was like, probably walked with her for four holes, and it was just consistent low ball flight, rocket. She just had this low cut. She was like hitting over and over, and it was hitting everything.
That's really cool. Good for her. That's awesome.
I told you about the girl. What's that hole at Olympic? It's like 14. That runs parallel to the street, and this girl snap hooked it. She was trying to go over the ridge at Olympic, where it's a up ridge, and then you go straight down, and then you have a wedge in. So she tried to hit like the mega draw, and then she hit the snap hook that I always love to hit. So she hit the snap hook, and then she did like the worst move ever, which is trying to play it out of like the cacti or the blackberry vines.
Whiffs
it twice, then chips out. I give her the sympathy clap, and she just looks frustrated. I think she recorded a 10 on the hole, and it was like awkward because we had invested so much time walking with her. It's like, well, I want to know what happens. Like, this is a train wreck, so now I'm invested in the. It was like, I felt for her, because she was like, you could tell it was a big deal for her to play in the U.S. Women's Open.
That's a big deal for everyone, I feel like.
The other thing that I saw at Olympic was like that any major venue, but really the United States Open, has to have a super sick 18th hole. And Olympics 18 is so perfect for a major championship because there's so much drama, and it like, it doesn't even matter if you hit it far. Like, that's not the challenge. It's like, hit it, and then can you distance gauge? And if you're off, left, right, short, long, you're screwed.
Yeah, good luck. Definitely. Well, the Warriors game's going to start soon.
Okay, so legend Audrey Kepler, let people know where you can be followed.
I can be followed on the Instagram, the OddK4Sev. And then I have Twitter. It's the AKGreat47. So hit me up if you have any other questions. And me and Lukey will be back with another podcast soon.
Oh, I was going to say, tell them about your prototype putter.
My Bobby Grace. It's pretty good. It's just like my other one, but the face insert's just not as the same. So we'll see. We'll see. I'll have to talk to Bobby about seeing if he has the same head of mine, but with the same insert in my head. So we'll figure it out. But anyone that wants a putting lesson, come talk to me.
Well, I will say, I got a putting lesson from you. I won a golf tournament, and then we played golf together in another golf tournament, and I was drilling putts. I probably had 6-1 putts. So I think that you can literally say you gave someone a 5-minute putting lesson and they went on to win a tournament. Just don't give them too much details about the tournament.
Not at all. Doesn't matter how you win. Just matters just when you win. It could be ugly or good.
Man. Yeah. It is super awesome. Audra, I appreciate your friendship. I hope you had fun jumping back on the pod.
Always, Lukey. I can't wait to see you and hang out with you again.
All good. We'll get you in the gym. Just let me know.
I will. Bye, Lukey.